First of all, I want to thank the Lord for being very, very generous and kind to me. You'll see that I'm wearing a brand new Camp Shoshana shirt, replacing my old worn out one. And the Lord has moved on somebody in this room to gift this to me, two of them, in fact. So thank you, Lord, and thank you for whoever was so generous to me. I appreciate it very much. All righty. We're going to look at the book of Deuteronomy. Everybody have an outline? Everybody get an outline okay? All set. Okay. Well, let's dive into this thing. I have two contradictory goals for this course. What I'll be doing is I'll be going through Deuteronomy following Arnold's exegetical outline notes as my base. Therefore, I'm going to be reading from the American Standard Version of the text. So that's the version you'll be hearing from up here. So goal number one, I'll be editing this material down so I can fit it into 10 hours. And goal two, I'll be expanding the material slightly by illustrating Deuteronomy with graphics and appropriate illustrations and explanations. So I'll be editing Deuteronomy down on one hand and expanding it on the other hand. Two contradictory goals. We'll see how I do. All right, let's begin with some foundational material. In addition to Arnold's notes, I've consulted six additional works. So I'm putting these up here to help you with your personal Bible study after Pastor Ken. So these are good material to have in your own library. I've consulted three Jewish works, the JPS Torah Commentary by Tige, the Jewish Study Bible by Berlin and Brettler, the Sansino Chumash by Cohen, and by the way, this is all listed on your outline, front page there. And then there's four Christian commentaries. First of all, the Moody Bible Commentary by Galneck and Van Lanningham, editors there. The Expositor's Bible Commentary by Gabelin. The Bible Knowledge Commentary by Walbert and Zook. And the classic that you all should have, Commentary on the Old Testament by Kyle and Dalich. Now, you'll see some maps and geographical information as we go through the course. I've used the New Moody Atlas of the Bible. And I've used historical and geographical maps of Israel by this guy named Fruchtenbaum. I don't know who he is, but I decided to use it anyway. And I've also used Google Earth Pro. Google Earth can come in handy sometimes. And also, I have Logos Bible software, so I've used maps from Logos Bible software. Now, additional REL resources I would recommend you pick up for studying Deuteronomy is manuscript number 006, The Law of Messiah and the Law of Moses and the Law of Messiah. Also, manuscript number 21, The Eight Covenants of the Bible. And manuscript 137, The Spiritual Life and the Believer's Rule of Life. And finally, manuscript number 176 on Shabbat, the Sabbath. Now, you can read these manuscripts in the camp library. You're all familiar with the camp library over here. So you'll find all the manuscripts over there if you'd like to read them. You can obtain them for yourself through the REL store or the REL internet site. You can have them tonight if you want to download them, something like that. But I'd recommend you get these manuscripts. All right, let me share one little short philosophical thought with you. I've observed that in the church in general, the Tanakh, the Hebrew Scriptures, is not taken very seriously. The Tanakh consists of two-thirds or more, maybe even 75% of the revelation, and most preachers only teach on a few well-known stories, a few messianic prophecies, a few topics. Very few teachers deal with the text in detail. Consequently, what I'm going to do during our time is to try to explore Deuteronomy by drilling down through the text, following Arnold's lead. You know, the Bible is God's revelation to us, therefore there's value in detailed study. So in the long run, I'm confident that you'll all benefit because you'll be familiar with all of this foundational book. All right. So at this juncture, let me familiarize you with some basic introductory material. I want to recommend that you study this material and burn it into your brain and master it, okay? Because if you do, the entire Bible will make a whole lot more sense to you. These are just basic foundational ideas. But this is a study in Deuteronomy, not a study of foundational ideas. So I'm not going to go into this material in detail. I'm going to be introducing you to this material. You'll have to come back to camp in succeeding years to get the rest of the story. Okay? So we're on page 2 of your outline. Page 2 of your outline. Let's first of all start with the date of Deuteronomy of 1406 B.C. Now how in the world do we arrive at that? We can arrive at that from 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. And it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. All right, how does this relate? Well, we can determine the date of Deuteronomy by looking at this particular verse. We know that the temple was built around 967 B.C., 966 B.C., so we're going to add 480 years for the sojourn in Egypt, the slavery in Egypt. That brings us to 1447, 1446 for the Exodus. Then we spent 40 years in the wilderness, so we've got to subtract that. And that leaves us with the date of 1407, 1406 B.C. for the writing of Deuteronomy. So you have that little slide on page 2. All right, the geographical location of our book is the plains of Moab. You can see Moab at the bottom of the slide there. This is the plains of Moab, just north of the Dead Sea. So let's zoom in with our satellite here. Here are the plains of Moab, just north of the Dead Sea. So that's the location of the writing of the book of Deuteronomy. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Abrahamic covenant. You're going to hear a lot about this, so let's discuss it using this chart. Now, the Abrahamic covenant is the eternal, unconditional, and unilateral covenant that God made with the Jewish people. It consists of three basic promises. First of all, a land promise. Abraham, I promise the land of Israel to you personally and to your descendants. Land promise. Second promise is the national promise. Abraham, your family is the chosen people. National election. And your family will experience a unique relationship with the Gentile nations. And that relationship is stated in Genesis 12:3. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. That's not said about the United States of America. It's not said about China. It's not said about Iraq. It's not said about Great Britain. It's only said about the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. Unique relationship. All right, the third promise is the spiritual blessing promise. Abraham, I will bless you, and you will bless others. In fact, the whole world. Now, the three basic promises of the Abrahamic covenant are expanded and developed by three additional eternal, unconditional, and unilateral covenants God made with the Jewish people. The land promise is expanded and developed by the land covenant of Deuteronomy 29 and 30. The national promise is expanded and developed by the Davidic covenant, 2 Samuel, 1 Chronicles, Psalm 89, for example. And the spiritual blessing promise is expanded and developed by the new covenant of Jeremiah 31 and Ezekiel 36. So the covenant that concerns us the most in this class is going to be the land covenant, because that's the chapter 29 and 30 of the book of Deuteronomy. So we'll look at that. All right, let's take a look at the chronological institution of the Abrahamic covenant. Here's a new chart for you. The Abrahamic covenant, this is the eternal, unconditional, and unilateral covenant with its three promises. It was established with Abraham in approximately 2100 B.C. Now, these are approximate dates. We really don't know. There's no way to really tell exactly when Abraham received this covenant, but approximately 2100 B.C., 2100 B.C. It was passed on to Isaac about 2000 B.C. All these guys lived over 100 years. Passed on to Jacob around 1900 B.C., passed on to the 12 tribes around 1800 B.C. Then we experienced the exodus from Egypt, and we came to the base of Mount Sinai, and in 1446 B.C., the temporary, conditional, and bilateral Mosaic covenant was instituted. And that's a very important verse dealing with that is Galatians 3:19. Now, the Mosaic Covenant, its purpose is to be a temporary administrator of the Abrahamic Covenant. I'll explain that in a little more detail in a little bit. Its purpose is the temporary administrator of the Abrahamic Covenant. For example, if you lived in the land after entering the land in 1406 BC, you lived under the stipulations of the Mosaic Covenant, right? Sure you did. All right? When David came to the throne and the national promise was expanded and developed, David had to live under the stipulations of the Mosaic Covenant, right? Okay. The Mosaic Covenant was administering these promises and these additional covenants. But what happened when the new covenant was instituted in 30 AD? What happened there? Well, right there in 30 AD, the Mosaic Covenant was rendered inoperative. It had fulfilled its purpose. It ceased to be a mandatory rule of life. It continues to be holy, righteous, good, and relevant. And you can see all those verses. These verses are at the bottom of the page. I believe I put them on the bottom of your outline. Yes, the bottom of page 3 there. But it is not required. It's holy, righteous, and good, but it is not required. The rule of life today is the law of the Messiah. Now, what is the law of the Messiah? Well, it's found in 1 Corinthians 9, Galatians 6:2, Romans 8:2, and James chapter 1 and chapter 2. It's referred to there. The law of the Messiah consists of the applicable commandments of the Brit Hadashah, of the New Covenant, of the New Testament. All the applicable commandments. And it also includes all the eternal principles found in the Hebrew Scripture. Don't overlook the eternal principles found in Tanakh. So, this is the Abrahamic Covenant in its fullness, and it's the New Covenant that is the portal for the Gentiles. Salvation by grace through faith. That's where Gentiles are grafted into the church, grafted into the olive tree. The olive tree is a place of blessing. And so in the church today, we have the natural olives. That's those of us who are Jewish believers. And we have the wild olives, the Gentile believers. You guys are a little more wild than we are. All right. So we're looking at the land covenant. Remember, that's the one that will be on our focus in the book of Deuteronomy. All right. Now, the question always comes up whether the Mosaic covenant is mandatory for today or not. But it's a temporary covenant. It's not an eternal covenant. And that's why Galatians 3:19 is so important. So let's take a quick look at Galatians 3:19. The section begins with a question. Why the law then? I'm sure Paul got that question quite a bit. If this thing is temporary, why in the world do we need it in the first place? All right, now Paul answers the question. The Mosaic law was added. Added to what? Added to where? Added when? Well, it was added in 1446 BC at Mount Sinai to the Abrahamic Covenant. So the Mosaic law had a beginning. The rabbis teach that it was eternal. But the New Covenant, the Brit Hadashah, teaches that it had a beginning. 1446 BC at Mount Sinai to the Abrahamic Covenant. Why? Because of transgression. The family of 70 was now 2 million conservative estimate. And this was now a nation. This nation needed laws so that we would know how to live a righteous and holy life. The possibility of transgression has multiplied tremendously. So we had to deal with the sin issue in a nation and guidance for the nation. The nation needed laws. Having been ordained, that tells us that this came from God. This is God's law through angels. By the agency of a mediator, that's Moses. We call it the Mosaic Law, and that's fine. But don't think that Moses thought this stuff up. Moses simply was the scribe. He was the one who wrote it down. All this comes from God, from the mind of God, not from the mind of Moses. He was the mediator. Until, there's another key word. Until when? Well, until when is Passover AD 30, until the seed would come, a reference to Yeshua, to whom the promise had been made. So we have a beginning to the Mosaic Law added in 1446 B.C., and we have an end to the Mosaic Law when it ceases to be operative, when Yeshua instituted the New Covenant in Passover A.D. 30. Okay? And we see him do this, that, for example, Luke 22:20, in the same way he took the cup after he had eaten, saying, "This cup, which is poured out for you, is what? The New Covenant in my blood." He's anticipating his death and resurrection all out on the cross. So he's instituting the New Covenant. And then, after his death and resurrection, 1 Corinthians 11:25, Paul writes, "In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, 'This cup is the New Covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me.'" So we see the New Covenant is in effect now, according to Rabbi Shaul, the Apostle Paul. All right. With that, all that said, I want you to keep these two covenants separate. Let's see, did I have this diagram in there? Yeah, page 4 of your outline. Remember, we have an Abrahamic covenant, eternal, unconditional, unilateral. It's the place of spiritual blessing. I'm not going to explain all those words right now. You can read the manuscript and pick that up. I don't have the time to go into it. It's an eternal, unconditional, and unilateral covenant. In contrast with the Mosaic covenant, which is temporary, conditional, and bilateral. And its function as a temporary administrator of the Abrahamic covenant. All right, now I beg you, please, please, don't do this. Please keep these covenants separate. Do not combine them together. Okay, when people squish them together into one covenant, what happens? It can't make sense out of it. It just becomes confusing, right? It's like that I'm trying to portray in this diagram. Keep them separate. Okay? They are two very different covenants. Okay? Make sense? I hope so. All right. So here, this is what we live under today, the full Abrahamic covenant. Now again, material that I would recommend, if you want to study this in more detail, here at Camp, Manuscript 006, The Law of Moses and the Law of Messiah. So it's all available to you right over here in the library. All right, now I'm going to give you homework. I'll test you on this next time. So, here's some homework. The importance of all scripture, please study the verses on the bottom of page 4 of your outline, okay? Read those over tonight before you go to bed. If you read those verses, you will discover that Deuteronomy is going to supply us with teaching, with reproof, with correction, with training in righteousness, with principles to apply to our daily lives, and examples, both positive and negative, to follow. That's what we're going to get out of Deuteronomy. All scriptures inspired by God and useful for teaching, reproof, correction, training in righteousness, and a couple other things as well. So please read those verses. Now, H, steps for application development. We want to apply this to our lives. We don't want this just to be a cerebral experience, an intellectual experience. So please study the 5 steps explained on pages 5 and 6 of your outline, Principles to Develop an Application. All right. We're going to refer to a common Hebrew literary device now and again called chiasm. What in the world is that, Bob? Well, read the bottom of page 6, and hopefully that'll explain what chiasm is to you, so I don't have to explain it. J, we will mention sacrificial offerings. So please read the material at the top of page 7 of your outline to get a definition of each of the sacrifices that we'll mention. K, legal terminology. We'll be spouting off some legal terminology, so please read the entries on the bottom of page 7 of your outline so you'll know kind of what the difference is between all these laws and ordinances and statutes, etc., that we'll mention. L, the historical setting of the Mosaic Covenant. This is by Dr. J. Carl Laney, who's one of my profs at Western Seminary. I thought it was a real good article to have on hand, so please study this article on page 8 of your outline. So I expect you all to get this read by 10 o'clock tonight. All right. M. I want to show you how Deuteronomy and what's called the Suzerain Vassal Treaty, how they compare this. The article by Dr. Laney deals with the Suzerain Vassal Treaty of the ancient Near East. Moses was led of God simply to use a format that his readers were familiar with, the Suzerain Vassal Treaty. And as we look at Deuteronomy and compare it with the Suzerain Vassal Treaty of the ancient Near East, they both have a preamble, they both have a historical prologue, that's followed by general stipulations, then specific stipulations, then blessings and cursings, and then witnesses to the covenant, to the treaty. So read that over, and read that article by Dr. Laney, and you'll be ready to go. All right. Exegetical terminology, page 9. I wrote on page 9, various concepts appear and repeat themselves throughout the book of Deuteronomy and the Bible. Not just Deuteronomy, whenever you're reading the Bible. A familiarity with these repetitive terms, you'll come across them all the time, will help you pinpoint the purpose for a phrase or the flow of thought. So I've listed a dozen of these key words just to keep in your brain as you study the Bible. You read a verse and you say, what is that? Well, it might be a command, or it just might be a fact. I mean, you see Arnold putting this stuff up here. It might be an object, like a person, a country, a place. It might be the reason something happens. It might be describing the results, both positive and negative, or the timing, or it might be detailing some historical information or some geographical information, or it might just be a very good cross-reference, or an observation, or an application. So if you keep these kinds of words, this terminology in your mind, you can just write that down on when you take notes. Now, that's the way I try to take notes. For example, here's an example of this kind of technique. When we get to chapter 1, verses 20 through 25, it'll deal with the sending out of the spies. And then in verse 26, we start looking at the first rebellion. Well, as we read chapter 1, verse 20, you'll notice that it's an admonition. And verse 21 is followed by a request. Verse 22 is a response to that request. Verse 23 describes the journey that results from that request. And verse 25 deals with return. So when we're talking about that, if you can pinpoint what the phrase is talking about, just write down that key word, I think your note-taking will go a lot easier. When you go back and read those verses, okay, verse 20, this is an admonition. Okay, what's an admonition? You know, and you get a sense of the flow of what's going on in verses 20 through 25. Okay, does that make sense? Oh, by the way, verse 25 is a report. Okay, does that make sense? I hope so. That's just a suggested note-taking technique here at Camp Shoshana. All right, we're now on page 10. All right, the book of Deuteronomy. We're just going to go through some introduction to the text. We're on page 10 now. All right, let's begin with the title. It's Devarim. The Hebrew title is Eile HaDvarim, meaning these are the words. It's based on the first two words of the Hebrew text. Usually, we usually see a shortened form of Devarim. Other Hebrew titles. Hellenistic Greek-speaking Jews called it the Mishnah HaTorah, based on chapter 17, verse 18. And the meaning there is the second law giving, or a law repeated, partial restatement of the law to a new generation with some new material. This is also a rabbinic name for the book. The rabbis also call it the Sefer Tochachot, meaning the book of admonitions. That's because there's many admonitions in this book. And the Greek title is Deuteronomion. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? It means a second law, based on an incorrect rendering of Hebrews of the Hebrew in chapter 17, verse 18. Chapter 17, verse 18 was incorrectly translated as Deuteronomion Tuto, the second law. The actual meaning is repetition or copy of the law. And of course, we get our English title, Deuteronomy, based on the Greek. All right, the author. Well, the scribe. Remember, Moses is really the scribe. God is really the author here. We would call it the Book of Moses. So we have external evidence pinpointing Moses as the scribe in this book. The external evidence is evidence outside the book of Deuteronomy. So the Hebrew scriptures ascribes and attributes the whole of the Pentateuch to Moses, and of course that includes Deuteronomy. There's nine references to Moses. The first one is in Joshua 1:7. That's the closest book. According to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. And the ninth reference is the last book of the Tanakh, Malachi 4:4. Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him. So that's just a quick look at the external evidence. I'm not done there. When Jesus quoted from it, he attributed it to Moses. And both the Jewish and Samaritan traditions ascribe it to Moses. All right, then there's some internal evidence within the book itself. About 40 times in the book it's attributed to Moses. And the book fits the timeline of Moses rather than the timeline of Joshua. It's earlier than Joshua because the whole story takes place outside the land. And all the geographical and historical notations show firsthand knowledge of the territory. It's also very similar to the other ancient law codes, such as the law code of Hammurabi. And so it fits the era ascribed to it. It fits in there. So it's following the treaty form used in the 15th or 14th century BC. That's the second millennium BC. Treaties of the first millennium BC did not follow the same pattern as treaties of the second millennium BC. So this follows the pattern of the era that is ascribed to. So everything fits pretty well there. All right, point C, the occasion. Well, this is a time of transition for Israel. Transition to a new generation. From the Exodus generation to the wilderness generation. To those who came out of slavery, those who were in the wilderness, were born and living in the wilderness. It's a transition to a new leadership. From Moses to Joshua. It's a transition to a new position. From the wilderness to the land. It's a transition to a new experience. From tents, you know, the wandering life of Bedouin, to settled life, settled down in houses. It's a transition from, down to their food, from manna, which was heavenly food, to earthly food. Every detail of their life is really being shook up here. So it's a time of transitions for Israel, deep transitions. The occasion is the eve of the conquest. They're getting ready to go into the promised land. They need to know who they are. The people need to know where they came from. The people need to know God's will now and in the future. So Moses is about to die. Thirdly, Moses is about to die. They need to know their covenant obligations before Joshua takes over. So a time of change. All right, the purposes, point D, the purposes, five purposes. The book is a theological explanation of the last 40 years. We're going to go over some history in this book. So the people need to know why the wilderness wanderings occurred. Why have we been going around in circles for 40 years? Secondly, Israel has to be reminded of her status before God. You were the chosen people, and certain obligations come with that status. The people need to be prepared for conquest of the land. They're going to fight some wars. Another purpose is to prophesy their future, both the near future and the far future. And then it's supplemental. Another purpose is supplemental. It fills in the details of the earlier writings of Moses. All right, point E, the nature and distinctiveness and characteristics. Basically, it's a covenant renewal document, a renewal of the Mosaic covenant with the wilderness generation. And that's the first point. The second point is, second characteristic, there's much repetition of law and history. Repetition of law and history. About 50% is new material. The content of the book consists of history, historical material, legal material, and prophetic material. Historical material, legal material, and prophetic material. Now, fourth purpose, it's a book of love. Love has not been mentioned before this book. We're going to encounter the idea of God's love five times. Pay attention to that. Very important factor. All right. Point F, page 11. Key words and phrases. There are 17 key words or phrases in this book. I'm just going to comment on the most common two. The first word is the word land, over 200 times. The word land. Another very important phrase is the idea of obedience. We'll come across that some 227 times. So obedience and the land are two very important concepts. All right, point G, the key verse, is Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5. Up on the screen here. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. That's the primary verse. That's the key one. All right, and the key emphasis is obey. We're going to run across a lot of synonymous terms for obedience. Hear, keep, do, serve, fear, cleave, walk. You're going to hear terms like that. They all mean obedience. All right, point I, key points. 11 key points here. I don't think I gave you enough room there, right? Small. First one is God's uniqueness. God's uniqueness. Second one, God's covenant relationship with Israel. Covenant relationship with Israel. Number three, Israel's uniqueness. Not only is God unique, but Israel is unique too. And so the fourth point is God's unique relationship to Israel. God has a covenant relationship with Israel, but a unique relationship as well. Fifth point. Israel's God is to be worshipped in one central sanctuary. This is stated one way or another some 29 times. All right. Number six. Sixth key point. Israel's requirement is to love God. Israel needs to love God. Seventh key point is the danger of idolatry. That's going to be mentioned 11 times. The danger of idolatry. Another key point is Israel's obligation, number eight. It's Israel's obligation to be a holy people. Ninth key point is the principle of reward and punishment. Blessings for obedience, curses for disobedience. Blessings and curses for the covenant. Number 10 is a very important key point, the admonition. Remember, do not forget. Remember. And the final key point choose a life of obedience to the law of God. Make your choice. Choose a life of obedience to the law of God. Now, just a quick rundown of the relationship with the other books of Moses. Just a one-sentence summary. So there'll be five sentences here. In Genesis, God called Israel and instituted the Abrahamic covenant. In Genesis, God called Israel and instituted the Abrahamic covenant. In Exodus, God delivered Israel. This is the Exodus from Egypt. God delivered Israel. In Leviticus, God sanctified Israel through the law. They were set apart to be a special people. God sanctified Israel. In the book of Numbers, God disciplines Israel when disobedient. Book of Numbers. And now in Deuteronomy, God expresses his love for Israel through his faithfulness. God expresses his love for Israel through his faithfulness. All right, point K on page 11. Divisions and structure, there's two basic parts. The first part consists of three addresses, three speeches by Moses. In chapter 1 through chapter 4, verse 43, Moses tells what God has done for Israel in the past. What God has done for Israel in the past. And then he makes a second address in chapter 4, verse 44 through chapter 11. We learn about Israel's obligations in the present. Israel's obligations in the presence, the law of God. And then the third address of Moses, chapter 29 through chapter 30, deals with Israel's future and the land covenant. So the address, the speeches of Moses, deal with the past, the present, and the future. And then the book closes with a second division, second major division, the last words and death of Moses. Chapter 31 through 34. Just a quick observation regarding the New Testament. This book is quoted over 80 times. It's the most quoted book in the Brit Hadashah. So we can't overlook Deuteronomy, can we? Quoted 80 times. Very important book. All right, point M, the main theme. Beware lest ye forget. And the covenant is renewed. Don't forget my covenant. And there's a few sub-themes. One is divine faithfulness. How God is faithful to Israel. Another sub-theme is obedience. Observe this and do it. Obedience. All right. Ready to get into the text? Got your fingers cramped yet? All right. Now we're going to start with, we're on page 12 with the text of Deuteronomy. We'll begin with the preamble here. This is the introduction to the covenant. We start with covenant background in chapter 1, verse 1. By the way, is that type readable for all of you? I don't use pure white type. I use a grayed out type because I don't like the how contrast it is. Can you all read it okay? Okay. I won't change any contrast there. All right, chapter 1, verse 1, first part of the verse. These are the words which Moses spoke. Now, Moses will soon die. So there's a need for covenant renewal here. He was the first prophet in Israel, first prophet of the nation itself. And he was the greatest prophet until Yeshua. Now, Abraham was also a prophet, but that's long before nationhood. So he's the first prophet of the nation. And that phrase, "these are the words," is the normal beginning for all preambles. "These are the words which Moses spoke unto all Israel." So Israel is being addressed. This is a Jewish covenant. It's not for the church. It's for Israel. And Israel is the only nation in the world to have the Word of God as its constitution and founding document. That's the only nation in the world to do that. And then that phrase, "all Israel," very common phrase in Deuteronomy. Then he talks about the location, beyond the Jordan, in the wilderness. Beyond the Jordan is kind of a fluid term. It can mean either the west or east bank of the Jordan. Six times it's used of the east bank of the Jordan, three times it's used of the west bank, and sometimes it's used of the wilderness, of the desert territory. So that's kind of a flexible term. Then at the end of the verse here, "in the Arabah against Suf." Now we're going to see some specific locations here regarding the Exodus from Egypt. So first of all, the Arabah. The Arabah is the Rift Valley, the Great Rift Valley. It extends from the Sea of Galilee all the way down the Jordan Valley to the Red Sea. See this on the map? This is the Great Rift Valley. So we're going to be talking about the Arabah, which is in the Jordan Valley. All right, Suf. Suf is, on this map, the Red Sea. A little bit of the Red Sea poking up there that we can see on the map. This is the Yam Suf, or the Red Sea. And the verse says, "over against," that means the southern end of the Arabah. That's the southern end of the Arabah. Is from the Dead Sea down to the Red Sea. That's the Arabah proper. All right, the second part of verse 1. Between indicates a number of towns here. First of all, Paran, which is also Kadesh Barnea. Tophel, we don't know where that is. Laban, we don't know where that is. Hatzerat, that's in the east of Mount Sinai, and Dizahab, which is east of Hatzerat on the Gulf of Aqaba. So here's a map, and we know where Kadesh Barnea is, located in this location right about here. And we need to go to the south. Here is Mount Sinai, and Hatzerat is located to the east of Mount Sinai, and then to the east is Dizahab. So we know where some of these locations are for the route of the Exodus. All right, verse 2. It is an 11 days journey that took 40 years to complete, all because of the sin of Kadesh Barnea. So there's about 140 miles from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea. So from Horeb, here's your map. And this is Mount Sinai from Horeb, Mount Sinai, by way of Mount Seir. So we left Mount Sinai, we went up the Yom Suf, up the Red Sea, to the base of Mount Seir. This is the Mount Seir mountain range. The Mount Seir mountain range coming down. Here is a small snippet of the Mount Seir mountain range. That's the Arab town of Aqaba in the foreground. You can see it's quite a rugged mountain range. So from that point, we've gone north up the Gulf of Aqaba, and now we're going to cut northwest and head over to Kadesh Barnea. Over there. And we should have entered the Promised Land at that point, but the sin of Kadesh Barnea intervened. All right, verse 3, we come to the date. And it came to pass in the 40th year. This is the 40th year of the wilderness wanderings, where it started in 1447, we're now in 1406 BC, 40 years later. In the 11th month, that's January or February, on the first day of the month. And the act, Moses spoke unto the children of Israel. And the content, according to all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them. So the commandments of the law of Moses are going to be repeated. And this may have included other commandments during that was written down during the 40 years. All right, verse 4. After he had smitten Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who dwelt in Ashtarot at Edrei. So here's our map. Now we're going to have to go north on this map in order to find these locations. So here we go. Okay, here's Heshbon at the north end of the Dead Sea. And way up north by the Sea of Galilee is Bashan. And Og dwelt in Ashtarot, located east of the Sea of Galilee, and at Edrei, which is a little south of Ashtarot. So the book was written after these two kings had been conquered. All right, verse 5. We come to the discourse. Beyond the Jordan, that's the east bank, in the land of Moab. So here is our map again. There's Moab on the east side of the Jordan, east of the Dead Sea as well. Second part of the verse. Began Moses to declare this law, saying. So Moses is about to begin his exposition of the law of Moses. And that's instructions on how to walk with God. So we're now at point two. Whoops. Point three, excuse me. The historical prologue, which is covenant history. Deuteronomy, again, is paralleling the Susan Vassar Treaty. So this is his first discourse, an historical review, and it's to explain what the suzerain did for Israel. Explain what the suzerain did for the vassal, what God did for Israel, his faithfulness. So the loyalty is going to be grounded on the benefits received. And it's a call to Israel to leave Sinai and go and possess the land. So we come to verse 6, and we come to a command to depart from Sinai. So let's move to verse 6 here. The Lord our God spoke unto us at Horeb, saying, so the Lord our God, we'll come across this about 50 times in Deuteronomy. Its emphasis is on God, the covenant keeper. Second part of verse 6. You have dwelt long enough in this mountain. So the mountain here is Mount Sinai. They've been there about a year. We paused at Mount Sinai to receive the law of Moses and to build the tabernacle. So in the first part of verse 7, turn you and take your journey. So God is eager to have Israel enter the land. Second part of the verse. Go to the hill country of the Amorites. The hill country of the Amorites basically consists of the east side of the Jordan, that area right there. Third part of the verse. And to all the places nigh thereunto. Well, this includes from north to south, Bashan, Gilead, Ammon, Moab, and Edom. That's basically the hill country of the Amorites. Then, in fourth part of the verse. In the Arabah, this is the Jordan Rift Valley. And from north to south, it includes the Ion Valley, the Hula Valley, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan Valley, the Dead Sea, the Arabah proper, and the Red Sea. That whole territory. Then he says, in the hill country. In the hill country. The hill country consists of this area here, the central spine of Israel, including the mountains up into Lebanon, what we know as Lebanon today. It consists of Upper Galilee, Lower Galilee, the hill country of Ephraim, we call Samaria today, the hill country of Judah, and the wilderness of Judah. Again, all the central spine of Israel. Then point 7F, in the lowland. The lowland is the Shvelah. This is the intermediate territory between the coast and the Judean hills, called the Shvelah, lowland. G is in the south. That's the Negev. Then he says, and by the seashore, that's the coastal plain. Coastal plain, all the way up the Mediterranean there, consists of the plain of Asher, the plain of Sharon, and the Philistine plain. The land of the Canaanites. Well, the land of the Canaanites is the southern part of the promised land. That's a generic term. And then Lebanon, that's the northern part of the promised land. That's never been occupied. And the northern border is the great river, the river Euphrates. You can see it there, the Euphrates. And this is my understanding of the boundaries of the promised land. You can feel differently about them, but how I came to this conclusion is a different class. But you can see here the boundaries of the promised land superimposed on the boundaries of the modern Middle Eastern states, a little bit of Turkey, a huge chunk of Syria, all of Lebanon, a little bit of Jordan, a little bit of Egypt. Well, I think that would be the Messianic kingdom, something like that. All right, verse 8. Behold, I have set the land before you. This is the promise of the land. This is constantly repeated. This is what God promised to the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Second part of verse 8. Go in and possess the land. That's repeated some 18 times. And the basis which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. The patriarchs are named about 7 times in Deuteronomy. It's always connected with the Abrahamic covenant. To give unto them, he's talking about the patriarchs there personally, not yet fulfilled, this awaits the Messianic kingdom, and to their seed after them, that's the Jewish people, generically. So this has been partially fulfilled. Now in verse 9, he recalls the appointment of the judges. And I spoke to you at that time saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone. So at that time is while he's at Mount Sinai, and the inability of Moses led to a plurality of leaders. Moses was overwhelmed by the task. He was burning out. I'm not able to bear you by myself alone. Verse 10. The reason for this is because Israel is such a great size now. The Lord your God multiplied you. And the Lord your God appears some 250 times in Deuteronomy. He's multiplied you. There's a minimum of 2 million people present. If each couple had a couple of kids, that's a conservative estimate. 2 million. And the result, behold, you are this day as of the stars of heaven for multitude. Now, he's not talking about merely numbers. He's talking about density here. A dark night sky filled with stars. So go out tonight at midnight and look up in the sky. All right, verse 11. Moses utters a blessing. The Lord, the God of your fathers, make 1,000 times as many as you are and bless you. So Moses is not against any more numerical growth. He's not intimidated by it. As he has promised you. That, of course, is in the Abrahamic covenant. And it's the Lord, the God of your fathers. But the problem comes out in verse 12. How can I myself bear? Moses is burning out. He needs help. It's too much for one man. How can I bear your cumbrance? That's your trivial quarrels. How can I bear your burden? That's providing for your needs. How can I bear your strife? That speaks of legal issues, constant issues to settle. Nothing has changed in the Jewish community. Verse 13, the recommendation. Verse 13, take you wise men, or take you men that wise, means they have wisdom, understanding, they're discerning, known, that means they have knowledge, they're men of reputation, according to your tribes, so all the tribes are going to be represented, and the role of Moses, I will make them heads over you. He will officially appoint them. He'll make the final decision regarding who becomes a co-leader. Verse 14, the response of the people. And you answered me and said, the thing which you have spoken is good for us to do. So the people were involved in this decision. And so these people were appointed. First of all, they were selected. So I took the heads of your tribes, men, wise and known, and made them over you, judges. Now this is a very organized breakdown. This is the first tier of the legal system. These are Moses' assistant judges, captains of thousands, captains of hundreds, captains of fifties, captains of ten. And then he says, and officers according to your tribes. This is the second tier of the legal system. These are the shotrim. These are the police. These are the police officers to enforce the decision of the judges. Then in verse 16, and I charged your judges at that time, saying, and he gives them four instructions. First, hear the causes between your brethren. In other words, hold court and hear a case between Jew and Jew. Secondly, judge righteously. Provide a fair hearing between a man and his brother, between fellow Jews. Also, the sojourner that is with him. That's speaking of the Gentile. Just because you're a Jew doesn't make you right, doesn't give you an advantage in the court of law. It's supposed to be perfectly fair. Verse 17. Third instruction. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment. In other words, equal treatment under the law. And the specifics. You shall hear the small and the great alike. Equal treatment, whether they're rich or poor, whether they're weak or powerful. You shall not be afraid of the face of man. Don't be intimidated by anyone. Why? For the judgment is God's. God is the proper object of fear, not man. It's his will that righteous judgment be carried out. And the judgment of the judges is recognized as that of being of God himself. And finally, fourthly, and for the cause that is too hard for you, you know, they're not going to be able to decide every case, you shall bring unto me, and I will hear it. He's the court of appeal, and Moses had direct access to God, so that's a pretty good Supreme Court, isn't it? And so the conclusion, in verse 18, and I commanded you at that time all the things which you should do. All right, that brings me right to the end of my time. And so we will pick it up next session, chapter 1, verse 19, with the sin of Kadesh Barnea.